Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LePonier. In this hour, drama. We'll hear from City Hospital later on with a story of a blind boy regaining his sight. Right now, it's the Hallmark Playhouse with the story McLeod's Folly, a Depression-era tale of a former reporter from January 6, 1949 on CBS, starring Robert Young and author James Hilton.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Robert Young in Louis Brumfield's McLeod's Folly on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we are delighted to present another story by Louis Brumfield, whose work has already proved so popular on our program. Our choice for this evening is McLeod's Folly, a warm-hearted and clear-headed yarn about the exciting things that can happen in a small American town. This is the kind of thing Louis Brumfield does so well. He puts a firm finger on the pulse of American life, and the result is always good entertainment with a real meaning to it. Mr. Brumfield has been many things in his life. And nowadays, for instance, he does a lot of farming. But in his early years, he was a newspaper man. And it's doubtless from his recollections and experiences of that colorful and tumultuous world that he drew some of his inspiration for McLeod's Folly. And we're especially lucky tonight in having in the starring role that very fine actor, Robert Young. And now, Frank Goss, how about a few words from you?
There are Hallmark cards for every memorable occasion on your calendar. For birthdays, anniversaries, holidays. Yes, for every occasion that calls for remembrance, for a friendly greeting, a word of good cheer, an expression of sympathy. There is a Hallmark card that says just what you want to say, the way you want to say it. And that identifying name on the back, Hallmark, well, that says you cared enough to send the very best. Hallmark Playhouse, starring Robert Young in Louis Brumfield's McLeod's Folly.
...1931, and prosperity was still around the corner. Freight trains were crowded with men with aimless destinations and even more uncertain futures. Each and every one obsessed with the same idea. Somewhere in America, there must be a job. A freight train neared Plattsville. A boxcar door slid open, and a gaunt-looking young man in shabby but well-cut clothes leapt from the speeding car. Carefully dusting the cinders from his coat, he headed for town.
Yeah?
I'm looking for a job. Do you happen to know where
Beat it. I'm no employment agency.
Thanks for the key to the city. I was only asking for honest work.
Work? If one of you shiftless tramps was faced with an honest job, you'd break both arms to get out of it.
I could do one of two things. I could move along or I could paste you one. If I move along, I don't know where I'll wind up. At least if I paste you, I'll have the satisfaction of a job well done.
Police! Police! Get the police!
Gather
around, folks. Closer.
Come on,
closer. I've just committed a horrible crime. I've asked this man where I can find a job. From which tree shall I hang?
Never mind, young man. I'm Mrs. McLeod. Now come along with me.
Thanks, ma'am, but there seems to be a little discussion here, and I'd kind of like to see it settled.
He talks fancy about wanting work, but he's a vagrant, a tramp.
You don't have to listen to this young man. Just come along with me.
Go on back to your newspaper office, Mrs. McLeod. Get out an obituary column. Stick to something you understand.
No, stay here, Mrs. McLeod. You have an obituary column?
Well, I
might have another name for you to add to it. Come here, mister.
You won't talk so fancy when you're in jail. I promise you that.
Now, come along, young man. Everybody go home now. The show's over.
Well, he doesn't look like a tramp. Well,
thanks for taking my part, but I've been in these mix-ups before.
Here, now, let's go up this side street. The important thing for you to do is to keep out of sight.
Why? I didn't do anything wrong. I merely asked where I could find a job.
You'll be arrested as a vagrant. It's an old habit around here. 60 days is the usual sentence, sometimes longer.
60 days? Just for walking through Plattsville by mistake?
Mm-hmm. Now, at the top of the hill is my house. Now, go to the back door and tell the housekeeper that Mrs. McLeod sent you. She'll give you a good meal. You can have a bath and then hide in the woodshed. And tonight, you can get out of town.
The Underground Railway. The slave escapes in the dark of night. You're reliving ancient history here in Plattsville, Mrs. McLeod. I thought the Emancipation Proclamation made all this unnecessary.
I know, I know. Oh, here comes Sam Hildreth from the police force. Now get up to my house quick.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I'd run into some other arm of the law anyhow.
Hey, you. Come here.
Yeah?
Where are you going?
No place in particular, just walking.
Then walk along with me. I've got a particular place for you.
What did I do?
You picked the wrong town to panhandle in.
Really? So you assume I was panhandling? Have you got any evidence?
Now, come on. You're going to be a guest of the city for 60 days.
Well, so long, Mrs. McLeod. You tried hard. Somebody ought to bring this town up to date. You know, the Bill of Rights.
Start hiking. Come on, Richardson. A lady here to see you.
Okay.
Well, not so talkative since you've been with us a couple of days. We know just how to take the starch out of guys like you.
Hildreth, have you ever lost your fists, you lose your power of speech.
Hurry back from your visit. I see you still need a little starch removed.
Well, Mr. Richardson, I thought maybe you could use this carton of cigarettes.
Hello, Mrs. McLeod. You're just the lady I want to see. You run a newspaper, don't you?
Yes, the Shield and Banner. Why, have you got a little item for me?
A little item, Mrs. McLeod. I'll give you a screaming headline. First, I'll give you the facts. You can start off with a short description of this unsanitary cesspool they call a jail. Tell your readers how a lot of honest, bewildered men are packed in here, living every day on 8 cents worth of stale bread, bitter coffee, and condemned meat, working in holes that even the rats have deserted. Let me tell you about a gang of us who were put on sewer detail. Joe?
Yeah?
How long you been laying pipe down in the sewer?
38 days. 22 more to sweat out.
With a crew like this, the city can lay a lot of sewer pipe for free.
The city's not laying it. This is Doherty's job.
Who's Doherty?
General contractor. Handles all city projects. Political boss of Plattsville.
So, he gets prison labor to do his jobs, charges the city for their work, and pockets the money. Nice racket.
Yeah. Swell racket. As long as he can keep the jail full
of honest men. How does he get away with it? Don't people know what's going on?
Look, you talk like a jailhouse lawyer, Richardson. Folks don't care as long as the jail is full of people they don't know.
That's where you're wrong. People always care about others when they know the facts. I have faith in people.
Richardson, have you forgotten the beating you took out on the street?
The people didn't beat me. That was a political machine. And I don't intend to dig sewers for any Mr. Doherty and his political machine. And I don't intend to see any more honest men doing it. There's a real item for you, Mrs. McLeod.
I can't print that, Mr. Richardson.
Why not? You run a newspaper, don't you?
It used to be a newspaper when my husband was alive and running it. Today, a lot of folks call it McLeod's Folly. Jim wouldn't like the news we print now. Social items, obituaries, weather reports, farm doings.
Then here's your chance to print something your husband would have approved.
Well, I've often thought what a powerful force my paper could be. But I have no money. And I'm not big enough to tackle Doherty.
Let me tell you a story. A long time ago, a man and his wife started out from Tennessee in a covered wagon. They were going to make a long-cherished dream come true. To have a little orchard in Oregon. Halfway across the Dakota Territory, their wagon was attacked by Indians and the husband was killed. The woman managed to escape into the hills where a scout found her and took her to Fort Lincoln. She had her choice of going back to Tennessee or joining the next train that passed through headed for Oregon. Now, she had a whole family down south. The wise thing was for her to go back, but she didn't. She joined the next train for Oregon, helped fight more Indians, spent months of jolting over rough, uncharted wild country. She finally reached Oregon and planted that orchard. And she was happy. You know why? That was the dream both she and her husband had shared. And she'd made it come true.
Jim and I used to dream of having the most fearless and courageous newspaper in the Southwest. Jim would have tackled a man like Doherty.
I understand. I was a newspaper man not so long ago. I know when a story needs writing. This one is going to be written by me.
And it's going to be printed by me.
We'll work together, Mrs. McLeod. I'll get all the information we need right here in jail.
There's an election coming up in 3 days. Doherty's machine is sure to be reelected. But, Mr. Richardson, at least we'll go down fighting.
You never can tell what people will do until after the votes have been counted. Now, here's tomorrow's streamer headline. What are the citizens of Plattsville going to do about it? In subheads, what about the graft and prison labor? And then hit them with this first line.
Sit down, Richardson. I'd like to talk to you.
Thanks for taking me off the city guest list, Mr. Doherty. I see you're reading your morning edition of the Shield and Banner.
Yes, fearless editorial. Oh, very emotional. Wonder who's doing Mrs. McLeod's ghostwriting.
I wouldn't know, but whoever it is certainly knows what he's talking about.
Yes, I was shocked when I read of the injustice being accorded the transients who passed through our city. That's why I ordered your release, Richardson.
You must have a lot of influence with the judge.
Well, naturally, the court couldn't simply reverse its decision and let you go scot-free. You'll be on probation for 60 days, just a trial period, you understand, to demonstrate that you're a decent member of society.
And a harmless one.
Mr. Richardson, I admire your spirit. This town needs men like you.
Look, Doherty, this couldn't be a move of yours to prove to the town what a big heart you have. Am I to become the living, walking example that there is no miscarriage of justice in Doherty's town?
As a matter of fact, it wouldn't be a bad idea for you to suggest that Mrs. McLeod's ghostwriter gets out an editorial to that effect.
I doubt whether I have your influence.
Hey. You know, son, I'm the owner of the Daily News, Mrs. McLeod's competitor. And how would you like a position on my paper as assistant editor?
What would I write for you? Stories about how men are thrown in jail simply because they arrive in Plattsville without jobs?
Well, I'll put it plainly. I had you removed from jail because I didn't want to become a martyr to the people, a hero. I don't like heroes. Men are out of jail. If you don't want to play ball with me, son, take my advice, be smart. Don't play at all.
Doherty, I've been looking a long time for a job. And I finally found one. I think I'll like working for the Shield and Banner.
Well, it can be a very short-lived job. Mrs. McLeod could be thrown into bankruptcy court tomorrow. I happen to be very close to her creditors.
I see. I don't suppose the creditors would object if we printed little innocent items of local interest.
No, I think that would be continuing the policy of Shield and Banner very nicely. You know, I wouldn't like to see Mrs. McLeod get hurt. She's a very old friend of mine, and I wouldn't like to see a man who's just starting a new job get hurt, as long as it's a job he's starting, and not a crusade.
Well, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Doherty, I'll be going out to gather something interesting for tomorrow's edition. Perhaps the Ladies' Aid Society could furnish me a choice morsel.
I'll be waiting for the next edition of the Shield and Banner, Richardson. In fact, tomorrow morning, I'll even read that paper before I read my own.
Mrs. McCloud. Sit down. I've got to warn you about something. If we continue our attack on Dorothy, you'll probably lose the shield and banner.
Mr. Richardson, let me tell you a story about a man and a woman who left Tennessee in a covered wagon.
In a moment, James Hilton will return to bring you the second act of McCloud's Folly, starring Robert Young. But first, how easy it is to let an important date slip by unnoticed. Somebody's birthday, somebody's anniversary, some other occasion for a thoughtful remembrance. Well, that's why you will want a Hallmark date book that's waiting for you now at the friendly store where you find Hallmark greeting cards. For, you see, this useful little book has a separate calendar page for each month of 1949, with a place for names and addresses of people to remember during that month, so you just can't forget. There's also room beside each date for reminders of things to do that day, whether it's attending a meeting or keeping an appointment. And at the back of the book, there's a convenient place for starting to compile your next year's list for sending Christmas cards. Now, doesn't this sound like a useful little book, one that you would like to own? Just wait until you see how beautiful it is, too, with its lovely camellia on the cover, its dainty pink and white pages. It's exactly the right size to slip into your purse or to keep handy beside your telephone. And remember, this useful and beautiful Hallmark date book is yours without obligation. Just ask for it at the friendly store where you find Hallmark greeting cards. Now back to James Hilton and the second act of Louis Brumfield's McCloud's Folly, starring Robert Young.
Things were humming in the dingy old building that housed the Daily Shield and Banner. Tom Richardson and Mrs. McCloud had released the second blast against the Plattsville political machine despite Doherty's threat. And now it was the day before election. So little time and so much to tell.
Tom, this is a great day for the Shield and Banner. The phones have been ringing like crazy. Folks telling us that they're on our side.
People are interested, all right, but have we reached enough of them to have any effect?
Well, today's edition should convince any diehards.
Doherty's been too quiet. He won't let us get away with it. This is the day we've got to get through. We've got to work fast. Do you think my editorial is potent enough?
It's dynamite, Tom. But will the people question that we have no proof or evidence against Doherty?
We haven't time to gather evidence. We can only present facts and hope the people will vote according to their conscience. Now, let's get this to press.
Good.
Tonight, during the election parade, we'll go right into Doherty's camp. I've got 100 kids lined up. We'll flood the parade with a shield and banner extra.
If I were you, I'd send those kids home. I don't think we'll need them.
Hildreth, this isn't the pokey. You don't push people around in here. Announce yourself before you come in.
Okay, wise guy. I'm announced. Now, move aside. I'm taking over this paper. I'm the new editor. Mrs. McCloud, you're out of business.
On what?
Your creditors have closed down.
But we're all ready to go to press. The least you can do is let us run off our last edition.
Oh, no. I brought along my own staff. Boys, take care of the last edition.
Okay, boys.
Right away.
Come on,
boys.
They're smashing the presses.
That figured. That's the subtle Doherty approach.
Now get out of here, both of you.
Aren't you going to take me back to your charming little guest house again, Hildreth?
No. What for? Go on, have fun. Why don't you join the parade tonight?
Maybe I will.
Okay, boys, that'll do it. And, Richardson, be careful. Remember, you're on probation. I'd love to catch you in just one little slip. Get out.
I guess you wish I'd never come to this town, Mrs. McCloud.
I was just a ridiculous woman running a ridiculous paper until you came along. At least the Shield and Banner didn't die a slow, lingering death.
You're a great woman, Mrs. McCloud, and a credit to the newspaper profession.
I'm afraid I started a little late. I have only one regret, that the public didn't get to read that last editorial of yours.
You want to know something? I hope, but I never really thought Doherty would let us get that last edition out. We're joining that parade tonight.
the people will still know what was in that last editorial.
Special edition of the Shield and Banner, personally handed to you by the editor.
Say, your paper's getting a little thin, isn't it, Mrs. McLeod? Looks like a handbill.
We ran it off on a hand press. They smashed our presses. But this one sheet will awaken the people.
Extra! Bilks the people. Read about
the
free
edition of the Shield and Banner. Here you are, mister. Old Doherty uses prison labor on his jobs for free. Every time prison labor is employed, someone in Plattsville is out of a job.
Don't listen to him. He tried to panhandle me on the street. He's nothing but a bum.
I'm working for the Shield and Banner, Polson. Be careful how you talk to me now. Extra, get your extra. Vote for Doherty and you vote for oppression. Get your free copy of the Shield and Banner.
You're a stranger here. Who are you to tell us who to vote for?
Wait a minute. Even a stranger is allowed to talk. You might have a point, young fella. But can you prove what you say?
I can prove it in this way. When I came to this town, I didn't see any iron bars around it. If a family has a vicious dog, they put a sign on the gate, beware of dog. There was no sign on the gate to this city, beware of Doherty, and you need one. I always thought a man was free to walk down...
Grab those handbills. Tear them up. Get every one of those kids off the street. I'll take care of Richardson.
There, friends, there's a fine example of the brand of democracy old Doherty dishes out.
Shut up.
They took away our paper, they smashed our presses... They're tearing the handbills, and now they're trying to gag us.
You got a permit to distribute those handbills, Richardson?
I wondered when you'd get to that. So now I'm a probation violator.
Right, and it'll be a pleasure having you back where I can give you my personal attention. Let's go. Come on, break it up, everybody. Let us get through.
Mom, what's he done, Hildreth?
Please, Mrs. McLeod, please don't interfere. I want it this way.
And so do I. Step aside. Let us get through.
Say, mister, you wanted proof? Doesn't it look to you now like old Doherty believes me?
Come on, get in.
Looks to me like that young fella makes pretty good sense. And I don't like the way he was pushed around.
Well, I don't like lectures from strangers. Why, he's not even a member of our community.
But I am, Harry. I can remember when you came to this town and you were a stranger. But the town was different then. It welcomed strangers. What is a town but a collection of strangers who've become neighbors? Why, when a baby's born, it's a stranger. But we soon learn to love it. A stranger looking for a new land discovered our country. A stranger called Marshall Platt founded this city. Yes, I would say Tom Richardson is a stranger. I would say that
Tom... Come on, Richardson. Get to your feet.
It'll be easier for you to administer your love taps while I'm sitting down.
I'll do it my own way. Don't worry, you'll like it less standing. Get to your feet.
Hildreth, leave him alone.
But, Mr. Doherty, I caught him passing out handbills saying you were a crook, and I thought it'd be a good idea.
Who asked you to think? Oh, look, Richardson, this is all a mistake. You're a free man.
Free man? Nobody's free while you run this town. I may as well stay here.
Now, look, we'll call off your probation and you can leave town. You don't have to ride a boxcar either. Now, are you ready to leave?
I don't think so.
Do you know when you're licked? I'm giving you the chance to leave through this back door.
No, you're just a mite too anxious for me to go. Besides, I've got no place to go to anyway.
I think, Mr. Doherty, I can handle this.
Keep punching, Hildreth. You're winning my fight for me.
Richardson, leave through that back door. Please, I'll tell the people it's all a mistake. Inefficiency on the part of the police department. I'll order house cleaning.
That's a good idea, except that the house cleaning should start with you.
Now be sensible, boy. You came into this town looking for any kind of a job. You can stay here and be a rich man if you use your head.
You've been buying your way in this town for a long time. Now your money's no good anymore. Maybe it won't even buy you a railroad ticket out.
Oh, Hildreth, you fool. You gave this man a chance to become a martyr, as a hero. You aroused this town. Mrs. McLeod sold him a bill of goods. They're going to deliver this guy from jail.
Doherty, I'm going to open that door and stop those people out there from doing something they'll regret. Quiet! Quiet! Quiet, please! Friends of Plattsville,
This is neither the time nor the way to get Daugherty. Get him at the polls tomorrow, using the right that free men enjoy everywhere. He bought, schemed, and powered his way into control of this town, but you can remove him and his machine much easier and quicker by a simple process of election. Many of you feel that, as an outsider, I presume too much by helping Mrs. McLeod start a cleanup campaign. But I've always had a belief in justice, an idea that men were civilized, and a feeling of pride that this country of mine was different from all others. Most of all, I felt that an honest man, anywhere, had the right to walk a street any time and not be molested. And after tomorrow's election, I'm sure that honest men will again walk the streets of Plattsville with a new sense of freedom.
Tom, you did it. You did it.
No, I didn't do it. Neither did you, Mrs. McLeod. We all did it together. People will always do the right thing when they know the facts. I have faith in people.
Before James Hilton and Robert Young return, I'd like to tell you about the beautiful Hallmark date book that is waiting for you at the friendly store where you find Hallmark greeting cards. Those who already have theirs say it's just about the most useful little book they've ever owned. You see, every day of the coming year has a place in it with room to jot down things to do that day and a place for names and addresses of people to remember on important occasions like birthdays and anniversaries. It's a little beauty, too, with its camellia-decorated cover and its dainty pink and white pages. Now, all you do to get your Hallmark date book is just ask for it. There's no obligation. It's yours from the friendly store where you find Hallmark greeting cards. Here again is James Hilton.
Whenever you have a tale by Louis Brumfield, you're guaranteed good reading, and from our angle, good listening. And whenever you cast Bob Young in the hero's role of a Brumfield story, you have something pretty close to perfection. Thank you, Robert Young, for a splendid performance.
Thank you, Mr. Hilton. I don't know why it is, but I always like to play the part of a newspaper man. Maybe I'm just a disappointed reporter. Well, I'm a hero to my daughters, anyway. When they heard I was going to be on the Hallmark Playhouse, they said, "Swell, now you can bring us some more of those keen Hallmark dolls." So if it's all the same to you, Mr. Hilton, I'll take my pay in Hallmark dolls and remain a hero in the eyes of my most critical audience. My family.
Well, your wish shall be granted. And I want to hasten to add you're always a hero to everyone who ever hears you on the air or sees you on the screen. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you of a treat we have in store for you next week. It's one of those stories that will surprise you, called Clay Shuttered Doors by Helen R. Hull. And it stars that fine actress you've been hearing mentioned lately as a likely Academy Award winner, Miss Jane Wyman. And the following week, Christopher Morley's great comedy drama, Parnassus on Wheels, with that famous stage and screen star, Ruth Hussey. Our Hallmark Playhouse is every Thursday. Our director-producer is Dee Engelbach. Our music is composed and conducted by Lynn Murray. And our story was written for radio by Jack Rubin. Ladies and gentlemen, this weekend and every week, help to reduce traffic accidents. Adjust your driving speed to road and weather conditions. Pedestrians, too, should be extra careful. Remember, accidents don't always happen to someone else. It pays to be careful. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Look for Hallmark cards that are sold only in stores that have been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember, Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. This is Frank Goss saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time when James Hilton returns to present Helen Hull's Clay Shuttered Doors, starring Jane Wyman. And the following week, Christopher Morley's Parnassus on Wheels, starring Ruth Hussey. This program came to you from the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Hallmark Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from January 6th, 1949 on CBS. That program, part of the network's Thursday night lineup at 10 o'clock, nearly 15 million people tuned in for that show. Or they could have tuned over on the NBC and heard the Chesterfield Supper Club with songs from Perry Como. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now, City Hospital, released by CBS in the early 1950s. This episode with Melville Ruick called I Don't Want to Look.
City Hospital. City Hospital, where life begins and ends. Where around the clock, 24 hours a day, men and women are dedicated to the war against suffering and pain. Today's City Hospital story begins one morning in a semi-private room on the sixth floor of City Hospital, where two boys of 12 are playing a game. One leans quietly back on his pillows as if from long habit. The other, his eyes bandaged, sits in an easy chair, frowns with concentration, and finally says,
"Let's see. I know you're a vegetable. A person can eat you. Green and yellow. Brown."
"Come on, ask a question.
Give me a chance to think, Russ. Do you get eaten raw?"
"Nope."
"Cooked, huh? In a pie?"
"Yeah."
"Always? I mean, can you get eaten other ways?"
"Yeah, and that makes 18 questions. I think I got you skunked this time."
"Not yet, you haven't. Listen, you have a shell."
"Yeah, I've got a shell."
"A pumpkin! You're a pumpkin!"
"Oh, you're too good at this game."
"That was an easy one."
"No kidding, Danny. How come you know how all these things look? You never saw them."
"My mother describes everything to me. She ought to be here by now."
"Well, it's only 10:30.
"But she's always here by 10.
"Well, maybe she got stuck in traffic or something. Want to play another game?"
"Nah, I'm tired of 20 questions. Mom said she'd bring me a new bird record with all the bird calls. Boy, I wish she'd get here."
"Danny?"
"What?"
"How did it happen? I mean, I know your eyes were hurt in some kind of automobile accident, but you never told me about it."
"I was only a baby, so I don't remember myself. But the car turned over and the corneas of my eyes were damaged."
"Is that what they operated on?"
"Uh-huh. They did a corneal transplant on me. Put in a good cornea from the eye bank. My father was killed. Died right in this hospital. That's how we know Dr. Crane."
"I've only been sick a couple of years. But I'm going to be okay again as soon as they do this new cardiac operation on me. Want to play geography?"
"I'd rather hear that bird record. Mom?"
"No, Danny, just Dr. Crane."
"Oh, hello."
"Hi."
"Hi, fellas."
"Have you seen my mother, Dr. Crane? She should have been here long ago."
"She's been talking to Dr. Bright, Danny. He's going to remove the bandages from your eyes today."
"Oh, boy, how about that, Danny?"
"Dr. Crane."
"What's the matter, son?"
"Can my mother be there? I mean, can she stay with me when they take off the bandages?"
"I think that can be arranged. Is there anything else you want to ask?"
"No."
"Then I'll see you in a little while. Bye, Russ."
"Bye." "Don't worry, Danny. I got a hunch it's going to work out for both of us. You're going to be able to see, then they'll operate on me, and I'll walk out of here just like anybody else."
"Oh, Mrs. Wells, are you on your way to see Danny?"
"Oh, yes, Dr. Crane. Have you told him?"
"Yes, I have, and he seems quite calm about it. A lot calmer than you. Now, he wants you to be there when Dr. Bright removes the bandages. Do you think you can bring him to the treatment room yourself?"
"Of course. Oh, when I think that in a little while my boy will see..."
"Now, easy, Mrs. Wells."
"If you knew how I'd hoped and prayed for this day."
"Well, don't get your hopes up too high. You know these corneal transplants fail in half the cases."
"Oh, Dr. Crane, if this operation doesn't work, I don't think I'd be able to go on."
"Don't say that."
"I couldn't stand another disappointment."
"Well, you must be prepared for one, if only for Danny's sake. We'll hope for the best, of course, but don't you let him down in any case."
"Yes. Thanks for reminding me. When do you want Danny in the treatment room?"
"In half an hour. And I know you're going to be all right, Mrs. Wells."
"And now, high in the trees, we hear the song of quite another bird.
Whippoorwill, it says, over and over again.
That's a good one, Danny.
I like the thrush better.
I'll have to turn off the phonograph now, boys. Time for us to go see Dr. Bright.
One more call, Mom.
Not now, Danny. Come along. Give me your arm and we'll walk to the treatment room.
Mom?
Yes, dear?
Couldn't you push me in the wheelchair?
All right. You stand there and I'll bring it over. All right, now. Take my arm. There we are. And now, off we go.
Good luck, Danny.
I hope you don't mind my being on hand, Dr. Bright.
Honored, honored. You have a personal interest in the case, Dr. Crane?
Yes, I do. I'd just taken over as medical director here when the accident to Danny happened.
Uh-huh. Excuse me, I will pull down the window blinds. We do not want too much light at first.
Mrs. Wells has kept in touch with me through the years. I think she's a very remarkable woman.
Oh, yes, yes. Devoted her life to the boy.
Yes, and in some ways it must have been harder for her than for Danny.
I know what you mean. The boy does not remember what it is not to be blind, and so he is perfectly adjusted to his condition.
Yes. Here they are.
Ah, good morning, Danny. Mrs. Wells, wheel the chair next to this table, please. Danny won't even have to get up.
Yes, Dr. Bright. Is this all right?
We'll just turn it toward the window. So. Now, Danny, Dr. Crane is here, and your mother, so just try to relax.
Hello, Danny.
Now I am going to cut the top layer of bandage and unwind it, all right?
Mom!
I'm right here, darling.
Mrs. Wells, what is it?
Nothing. I feel rather faint.
Now, perhaps you'd better sit down. There's a chair over there in the corner for you.
Yes, I guess I will.
Here we go, Danny. Oh, my goodness, what are we taking off here, huh? About a mile of bandage. We certainly haven't been stingy, have we, Dr. Crane?
I'll have to check the supply room and see if there's any left for the other patients.
It's still coming. Yeah. Aha, now we are coming to the end. So, there we are. Now, close your eyes, Danny, and keep them closed until I tell you to open them.
All right.
That's good. Now hold still while I take off the pad. That's right. So. You can open your eyes now. Do you see any light?
Yes.
Oh, good, good.
I see light. And shadows.
Yeah, that is the window. The daylight coming through the blinds.
Daylight?
Turn your head, boy. Look around.
What's that?
What?
The walls. They're so close, falling.
No. They will not fall. That is the way they are. Look here. This is my hand.
Your hand?
How many fingers am I holding up?
Are those fingers? Do mine look like that? My hand. This is my hand. My arm. My legs.
Danny.
These can't be my legs. They're so long and thin. How can I walk on them?
Now, easy, Danny.
Who are you?
Why, I'm Dr. Crane.
Your face. Your face is so big.
Danny, listen to me.
Go away. I this place. There are so many things. Things everywhere. So big, crowding in on me. Mother. Mother!
Here I am, darling. Don't be afraid. Oh, my darling, you can see. My boy can see at last.
Mother?
Yes, darling. I'm mother.
No.
Danny?
No, you're not my mother. My mother doesn't look like you. My mother's beautiful.
And so she is, Danny.
No, she's ugly. Everything's ugly. I wish I'd never seen her. I wish I'd never seen anything.
Danny... Open your eyes.
No, I'm never going to open my eyes again. Never.
Back to City Hospital in a moment.
From now on, the career serviceman can look forward to his two retirement checks at age 65. For upon completing the required number of years of service, he'll be drawing Social Security in addition to military retirement. That's because service in the armed forces now builds credit toward both military and Social Security retirement. This new Social Security coverage also means greater disability insurance and expanded family survivor protection. Servicemen in their 50s or younger will need 10 years of Social Security coverage to qualify for retirement benefits. However, servicemen or women already in their 60s can qualify for Social Security retirement with less than 10 years of coverage. The exact amount of coverage time needed depends on your exact date of birth. Details on coverage time and benefit amounts can be found in Social Security pamphlets, available now in service libraries and reading rooms. Have you investigated your Social Security benefits?
And now back to City Hospital. It's several days later, and in Danny and Russ's room, Dr. Bright contemplates Danny with a kind of helpless anger.
My boy, think of the things you can do now that you can see.
Let me alone.
Forget the way the world looks in your head and open your eyes.
Why don't you let me alone?
Think of your poor mother, how she has prayed for this.
You're wasting your breath, Doctor. He won't ever open his eyes.
Perhaps if you would tell him, Russ, how happy you would be if your operation were over and you were well.
Excuse me, Dr. Bright. Would you give this note to Dr. Crane for me?
Yeah, certainly, Russ.
Thanks.
I will be back to see you, Danny. Goodbye. The great Dr. Bright. He gives sight, and he cannot make one small boy open his eyes.
We are going to put three more student nurses on this floor beginning tomorrow, Miss Chapman.
Yes, Dr. Crane.
I want you to take charge.
Oh, Dr. Crane.
Oh, yes, Dr. Bright.
I have just seen Danny again.
Huh?
No. Do not get your hopes up. There is no change.
Ah, you'd think he'd open his eyes again out of curiosity, if nothing else.
No, I could force him to, but it is better to wait until he will accept. The psychological trauma would be...
Yes. Yes.
Oh, the little roommate asked me to give you this note.
Hmm? What is it?
I don't know. I didn't read it.
Hmm. Russ wants to be transferred to another room.
What? But they are good friends.
Not only good friends, but good for each other. Up to now. Let me finish with Miss Chapman, Doctor, and I'll look into this.
Russ?
Yeah?
Let's play a game.
Nah, I don't want to.
But we haven't played all day.
I'd rather read.
You saw something?
Nah.
Yes, you are. You saw it because I won't open my eyes. Well, that isn't any of your business. What I've got in my head is a lot better than the horrible things you can see.
What you've got in your head is a lot of made-up things that aren't so. So just shut up and let me read my book, will you?
Boys, what's the matter?
Nothing, Mrs. Wells. Have you been quarreling?
No, it's okay, Mom. I was just bothering Russ and he wanted to read.
Oh. Danny, I brought you something. Here, darling. Take a good sniff.
Roses.
That's right.
Well, let me hold them, Mom.
All right. Careful of the thorns. Danny, you've always liked the smell of roses.
Mmm.
Roses look just as pretty as they smell.
So that's why you brought them. To make me open my eyes.
Oh, Danny, take a little look at the roses. And then you can close your eyes again if you want.
No.
Please, Danny.
No, I won't. I just won't.
Oh, Danny, you're killing me. I can't take anymore. Don't you want to see like other boys? Don't you want to go to school, play, live a normal life? Oh, darling, it doesn't matter if things aren't the way you imagine. You'll forget about that, I promise you. Trust me, darling. Just trust me. Here, look at the roses. Open your eyes. Oh, Danny.
Good morning, Mrs. Wells. Hello, boys.
Hello, Dr. Gray. I've brought Danny some flowers.
Yes, I see, Mrs. Wells. If you don't mind, I'd like to talk to Russ. Why don't you take Danny out on the terrace for a while? It's a beautiful sunny day.
All right. Come along, Danny.
Give me your arm, Mom.
Yes.
I got your note, Russ. Why do you want to change your room?
I don't want to be with Danny anymore.
But I thought you liked Danny.
He's okay. I just want to be someplace else.
All right, Russ. Perhaps these emotional scenes are a little upsetting for you.
It's not that.
Oh? What then?
Well, it's just... Well, I had this feeling if Danny's operation worked, that mine would too.
But his did work, Russ.
Yes, and he wishes it didn't. Being here with him, watching him keep his eyes squeezed shut, like he'd split if he opened them, makes me think, what if that happened to me?
You mean not wanting the operation to be successful? Well, that won't happen to you, Russ.
How can you tell?
Because you're different from Danny. You've only been sick a few years. You remember what it's like to be strong and healthy, to be independent and...
What's the matter?
Russ, I think we've hit on something. Yes, and I think you can help.
Me?
Now listen carefully, Russ, and I'll try to explain. You see, when Danny opened his eyes, the world seemed ugly to him. Well, that happens to a lot of people who have always been blind. But usually they want to see so badly that they keep their eyes open. And they soon get used to the real world.
But Danny won't even try.
Exactly. And I think he won't because he's afraid to see.
Afraid? Why?
Well, Danny's mother has always taken care of him, has sheltered and protected him, kept him happy. Now, if Danny can see, he'll have to stand on his own 2 feet like anyone else.
But don't he want to, for God's sake?
He doesn't realize what it would mean to him, Russ.
You mean he don't miss it because he never had it?
Exactly. But with your help, I'd like to give him a taste of what he's never known. And then maybe he'll realize how precious it is.
Well, how?
Well, I'll tell you. And you needn't worry. Mrs. Wells and I will be right outside the door the whole time you do your part.
Russ, thanks for playing games with me again.
That's okay.
I'm glad you're not sore at me anymore.
Well, like you said, it's your business if you don't want to see. Gee, it's 20 after 3.
Should we play the bird record again?
I know, should have given me my pill at 3.
Maybe she's busy.
But it's important for me to take my pills on time. I could get an attack or something.
Why don't you ring for her?
I did.
Maybe your signal isn't working. I'll push mine.
If only I could get up out of bed. The pills are out on the bureau, but I'm not supposed to get up.
Don't worry. She'll be here in a minute.
I can feel my heart pumping.
You just think you do, Russ.
No, I can feel it going faster and faster. I gotta have my pill.
Just be quiet, Russ. And also see my signal. She'll be here right away.
I think yours is broken, too.
No.
Well, they're both on the same line, aren't they? If mine's broken, yours probably is, too. So nobody will see the signal. And they've forgotten all about me.
They wouldn't do a thing like that.
Well, why aren't they here? See, the doctors told me I gotta be careful about those pills.
Don't get excited, Russ.
But...
You know you shouldn't get excited. Please, be still. Please. Russ?
What?
Are you lying still?
I can't.
But you gotta.
I can't. I can't. I feel as though I can't breathe. If you can only get the pills for me.
Yeah, I'll try. I know where the bureau is. I can find it.
You'll never get the right ones. Not with all that stuff on top of the bureau. Oh, now you spill the candy all over the floor. No, no, be careful. You almost spill all the bottles. Why don't you look where you're going?
I can't.
You can if you wanted to. If you can't for me.
No. No, Russ, you know I can't.
What do you mean you can't? All you gotta do is open your eyes. All right, I'll get up myself.
No! Oh. Is this the right one?
Yes. There's a glass of water there, too.
I see him. I'll pour out some water. Take it easy. I'll bring it over. Here.
Thanks, Danny.
Aren't you gonna take the pill?
Yes.
Anything wrong, boys? Your signal light was on.
No, Dr. Crane. Everything's swell. Look at Danny.
Why, Danny, your eyes are open.
Yes, I had to open them. Russ needed a pill and... Well, how are you now, Russ?
I'm okay. In fact, I'm fine.
How are you, Danny?
Me? I'm okay, too. In fact, it's funny. I didn't have time to think about it when I was getting the pill, but now... Well, things don't look as bad as I thought. You, Russ, or you either, Dr. Crane.
Then I'll confess something to you, Danny. Your mother and I have been waiting outside for some time now in case anything went wrong. But there was nothing the matter with Russ. He didn't need a pill.
Didn't need it?
No. We wanted to make you open your eyes and get you to see what things were really like.
But if I had been having an attack, Danny, you would have saved my life.
That ought to make you feel pretty good, Danny. Helping someone instead of always being helped.
Don't be sore, Danny. We only want...
Danny, where are you going?
Outside. You said my mother was there. I just want to see her. I want to see my mother.
Be with us again next week at this same time for another presentation of City Hospital. City Hospital, where life begins and ends. Where around the clock, 24 hours a day, men and women are dedicated to the war against suffering and pain. This series of programs is produced and directed by Ira Ashley and features Melville Ruick as Dr. Crane. City Hospital has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
City Hospital, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS syndicated recording from the early 1950s. And that brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.